From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy hump day. Yes, it is Wednesday, November 19th. It is a cold one, folks. This weather is certainly bothering me a little bit. You know, I woke up, came to work, had to get bundled up, brought out the big winter jacket, the gloves, the hat. Man, it is freezing outside. Hopefully y'all are staying warm as we experience this wintry Michigan weather. Gotta love it, right? Well, folks, we hope to keep you warm on today's show. It's going to be a hot one. We've got a great one, folks. Again, it's November 19th. And, you know, I got to ask, does that date ring a bell at all in your minds? Well, if it doesn't off rip, I want to tell you all that it now marks 10 years since the infamous Malice at the Palace brawl between the Detroit Pistons and Indiana Pacers. And, folks, we're going to invite a man who was right there, right when all of the craziness ensued on the court and in the stands. Yes, Detroit Pistons guard Lindsey Hunter will join me to talk about that moment. You don't want to miss that chat. We'll also give you a preview of the MSU and Notre Dame women's basketball game. Will be taking place tonight at 7 p.m. at the Breslin Center. A pretty big game against one of the nation's best for the Spartans. We'll chat with Brian Calloway, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. All of that and so much more. But hey, let's start this thing off with your current sports quick hit headliners for this Wednesday, November 19th. All right, let's start with the Champions Classic. The Spartans, battling injuries, turnovers, and foul trouble, gave the young and talented Duke Blue Devils a game in the Champions Classic in Indianapolis last night, falling 81-71. Brandon Dawson had 18 points, 9 rebounds, shot just 2-for-5 from the free throw line. Gotta make them from the charity stripe. Come on, BJ. All right, Alvin Ellis and Javon Best both missed the game because of injuries. The Spartans' next game will be on Friday at home against Loyola at 7 p.m. We'll be diving into the MSU and Duke game and analyzing why the Spartans failed last night. If you want to chime in on why you think that occurred and just your overall thoughts on the team thus far after taking a peek into the first two games of the year, call us at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. All right, Coach Cal's platoon system proved to be too much for the Kansas Jayhawks, although only two players scored in double figures, Andrew Harrison and Dakari Johnson. Karl Anthony Towns had a great overall game, finishing with 9 points, 8 rebounds, 3 assists, and 4 blocks. All right, how about the Red Wings, huh, folks? After a tough couple of weeks, in which the Wings lost two games in extra time and dropped 4-1 to Montreal on Sunday, Detroit showed up in impressive fashion against the Blue Jackets in Columbus last night. I tell you what, the Red Wings rookies made their presence known with 4 of the 5 goals coming from Tartar, Nyquist, Jurco, Sheehan, Darren Helm, iced the cake with the 5th goal. Jimmy Howard, 28 saves and notched his 19th career shutout. Detroit's next contest is against the Jets in Winnipeg tomorrow night. All right, the Lady Spartans will take on top 5 Fighting Irish tonight at the Breslin Center in a whiteout game. Notre Dame's freshman Brianna Turner, man, is she good. Might as well call her like Brianna James or Durant, huh? She's really good, folks. She will be the biggest threat for the women's team as Turner just broke Notre Dame's freshman scoring record with 29 points in her season debut. My goodness, they're going to have their hands full with her tonight. All right. And after beating the then undefeated Mississippi State team in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, Alabama jumps to the top of the college football playoff rankings. The Crimson Tide defeated the Bulldogs 25-20 on Saturday. And how about this? Jason Collins, the first openly gay player in the NBA or in any of the 4 major team sports in North America, will reportedly retire. Now, the former Stanford standout played for the Brooklyn Nets last season. Collins played a key role in the New Jersey Nets' first NBA Finals appearance back in 2002 against the Lakers. Collins was one of the first inductees into the National Gay and Lesbian Sports Hall of Fame. Well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners for this November 19, 2014. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on any of those, give us a ring at 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, and share anything that's on your noggin. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet us, and I will read your tweets live here on the air. Tweet me at AlMartinWKR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of at WKAR_sports. Well, let's start the show. All right, folks. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. And today, a special treat for all of you dedicated current sports listeners out there. Hey, it's a pretty big game that is taking place at the Breslin Center tonight. Michigan State will play host to the number 3 team in the nation, Notre Dame. I tell you what, the Fighting Irish always have a good basketball team each and every year. And I tell you what, Susie Merchant and her squad are certainly going to have to bring it. It's going to be an exciting game. I tell you what, if the Spartans pull this one off, man, will they be turning some heads nationally, folks. Breonna Turner, as I just mentioned, she is playing out of her mind. 29 points. 29 points in her debut as a freshman for the Fighting Irish, shattering the opening game for a freshman performance with 29 points. I mean, she can score in a plethora and an arsenal of different ways and aspects. She's going to be there tonight, folks. It's going to be an entertaining game. So, hey, do you want to attend that game? Do you want to see the Spartans take on Notre Dame? Well, I tell you what, for those that want to, all of those out there listening right now, if you want to win tickets, two tickets, take you and a friend to tonight's game. Call in 517-355-9527. But hey, you got to earn them. No, we're not just going to give them to you, okay? I'll throw out a question for you. And if you get that question right, then hey, you got the tickets. How's that sound, folks? So hey, blow up our lines right now. If you want to take a trip out to the Breslin Center and warm up by watching some late night basketball at the Brez, call us, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. It's going to be an exciting time, all right? Okay, well, I tell you what, folks, we've got a hot show in store for you. As I just mentioned at the top of the hour, today marks 10 years. I can't believe it's already been 10 years since this moment. I never forget, I was 14 years old. I was watching this game with my stepdad and my mom. My mom was kind of half watching up until stuff hit the fan with under a minute left in the fourth. But I'm watching it. You know, I'm a big Piston fan. I've been a Piston fan since I was little. And I'm watching the game. It was the Indiana Pacers versus the red, white, and royal blue Detroit Piston squad. All of a sudden, you know, there was a hard foul that, if you remember, Big Ben Wallace took. He was going to the lane, and Ron Artest just kind of, you know, hacks him a little bit. Ben didn't take too kindly to it, turns around, looks at Ron Artest, and delivers a Donkey Kong push, folks. Then after that, I mean, they get into this huge jarring match, and, things hit the fan here. You know, a few members from the Pistons, they empty their bench. The Indiana Pacers empty their bench. A few fists fly left and right. Some players are trying to calm everybody down. Ron Artest has this, like, odd moment where he sort of lays flat, you know, back first on the scorer's table. You know, he seems to be chilling out. You know, things seem to be dying down a little bit. All of a sudden, a beer comes out of nowhere, hits Ron Artest, and yeah, you can pretty much imagine what happens after that. He actually goes into the stands, starts fighting with fans. Fans come on the hardwood, start throwing punches, and it was unbelievable. It was probably the biggest brawl than I have ever seen in sports history, folks. It was unbelievable. So, you know, that moment was actually dubbed Malice at the Palace. The Malice at the Palace, folks. And so we're going to take a look at that moment again. That happened November 19th of 2004. It is now November 19th, 2014, 10 years to that day. And we're going to invite Lindsey Hunter, who, of course, was a point guard on that Detroit Pistons team. He was on the floor. If you ever seen footage of that moment, you'll see Lindsey on the floor as that moment is sort of escalating second by second, moment by moment. Lindsey is going to take us back in time to that moment, to what was going through his head, and how that moment sort of changed how security is run at sporting events, specifically in the NBA. So we'll chat with Lindsey. That should be a very intriguing conversation. And again, we'll be chatting with Brian Callaway in just a sec to get his thoughts on the Michigan State and Notre game tonight. Again, if you want to win tickets, folks, again, you got to earn them. We'll give you a trivia question live here on the air, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527, if you want to call in and win those tickets to tonight's game. But before we get to all of that, before we start talking women's hoops and the Lady Spartans taking on Notre Dame tonight, definitely want to talk about last night's game. Michigan State and Duke, folks. Michigan State fell to number 4 Duke in the Champions Classic, 81-71, the final of that one. Brandon Dawson, he had 18 points and 9 rebounds. Needs to get better at the charity stripe, though. Well, let's dive into this game real quick. Now I'll invite Alex Sharg to just sort of dive in and dissect this matchup. An interesting matchup, because I tell you what, Alex, throughout Coach K's and Tom Izzo's tenure, I tell you what, Coach K has pretty much just dominated this matchup now. He is now 8-1. 8-1 against Tom Izzo in the Spartans now. You and I both predicted that, I believe you did too. Did you predict the Spartans would lose this
game? Yeah, yeah. Okay, you said 12, did. I said 14.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. And, you know, when looking at this game, so it wasn't a surprise from both of us that this game, you know, fell into the hands of Duke. But more so, again, I said that this would be an analysis of this game would be one that you look at how the Spartans lose, not if they lose. Because I think it's pretty much safe to say, especially looking at how they played against Navy, that the Spartans were the clear underdog in this one. For me, when looking at this game, I guess I'll attack it from a defensive standpoint first. Michigan State's defense has to improve, Alex, for this team to be to compete against the top dogs in this year's college basketball realm. There were way too many plays last night where you saw just Duke, easy drives to the basket, uncontested drives to the basket, easy layup attempts. Michigan State, if this team is going to take off, they have to play better defense. Tom Izzo talked about on the brink of this season in his presser at Media Day how this team is taking a step back in two of its more important areas, two areas that you don't see Michigan State really lack upon, that being rebounding and defense. But I didn't think defensively this team would be struggling this bad. There was a moment, Alex, if you remember, in that second half, when Michigan State started to go on a bit of a run, it was actually at the very beginning of that second half, Michigan State held Duke to 0 points, no points, a donut, for four straight minutes. I'm sitting there, and Dickie V even pointed it out too. My man Dickie V, gotta love him, baby. He pointed out how Michigan State was shuffling their feet, contesting shots. They seemed to come out at halftime with a renewed sense of energy. And then after that, I don't know what happened, but it totally went out the window. Duke goes on a 7-0 run, and things start to spiral out of control. Denzel Valentine had some costly turnovers. If you remember, he had the push-off with the off-arm. And then, you know, a Duke player, I forget who it was, but, you know, Denzel's driving. He gets the ball poked from behind. It leads to a transition layup for Duke. And then the momentum started to change, and Duke sort of salvaged momentum and ended up pulling it out. But Michigan State's defense, I mean, my goodness, they got to have better on-ball defending, too, because I feel as though a lot of that drives, parting the Red Sea, so to speak, for easy layup opportunities, had to do with poor on-ball defending by the guards. Guys like Travis Trice, Denzel Valentine, the front court has to play better on-ball, going against guards like Tyus Thomas and Quinn Cook, who can burn you left to right.
That's the thing when you're playing Duke, though. You have 9 McDonald's All-Americans. You're doing, like, Kentucky A-shift and B-shift kind of thing here where you have so many good players, you just cycle them in and out and in and out. I think for the defensive side of things, when you were, I mean, you are a former player, Al. You are a former player. So you know when you're on defense, as much as you're playing that man-to-man and you're worried about Tyus and Okafor, you still have to have awareness for the paint in the middle and closing the gap down the middle. And they didn't really do that. I think a lot of the focus and a lot of those open gaps were made because the Michigan State defenders were focused on containing their individual guys that they were guarding, in my eyes.
And they didn't even do that, though. I mean, again, the on-ball defending on Tyus Thomas, I mean, there were many times. I mean, Tyus Jones, there were many times throughout that game where he just kind of just took Trice off the dribble and nobody was there in the paint waiting on him. Easy layup. I mean, that stuff just can't happen. There has to be more awareness on this men's basketball team.
Yeah, but what are you
team.
Supposed to do when you're trying to contain a 7'2" Okafor?
But if you remember, in that second half, Okafor got into some foul trouble. Okafor sat out a lot of minutes in the middle to late part of that second half.
Right.
And that's when Jones
that's
got
when
those easy
yeah,
layups. So
right.
I'm sitting there like, okay, that's from an effort standpoint.
I hear you on that.
You know what I mean? That has to be better. It just has to be better for me.
I hear you on that. But the other thing that you have to remember about Duke and Michigan State is, are you surprised at this point? I mean, it's not like you didn't expect the defense to fault. Izzo called it out. You saw it against Navy. For me, none of this is too much of a surprise. I think they're just early growing pains. I'm totally fine with the way Michigan State played. I'm surprised they actually kept it within 10. It should have been a 20-25 point game, I thought.
That was very surprising how Michigan State was able to keep it close. And I think that, you know, to harp on the defense one more time here, I think if there's any positive standpoint looking at the defensive end for the Spartans, I thought that Matt Costello did a relatively good job against Jahil Okafor. In the first half, Jahil, you know, he got some easy buckets. It was kind of frustrating, but Costello held his ground at the very beginning of that second half. And then it led to Okafor getting to that foul trouble, which, you know, the door kind of got cracked open for Michigan State to possibly salvage a very golden opportunity, which it didn't happen, obviously. But I thought Costello played a relatively solid game against Jahil Okafor defensively. Michigan State, on offensive end, Alex, they are relying way too much on the three-point line. They shot 20 threes last night. You know how many they made?
Five. Yeah.
Come on. Are you kidding me? I've never seen a Tom Izzo coach team shoot that many threes. It's almost like they are afraid to go to the basket.
That's something a John Beilein team would do, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
That's Michigan style.
Yeah, this really just baffled me. And you know what? Michigan State, and you talk about those threes, 20 threes taken, only five made. At some point, you have to say to yourself, okay, we got to find other ways to score because this isn't working.
Sure, well, that's the thing is, you can look at the percentage from last game and say, if it's not working, then fix it. But just keep in mind, the three-point selection in college basketball can work if you make it. Michigan,
yeah, but if
Creighton,
you're not, if you're not
many,
making it, if you're not making
sure,
it, though, Alex. Hey.
I agree, but I don't think that just because they're relying on the three this year isn't a bad thing. And Izzo didn't say that either.
I
agree last game. If it wasn't working, if it's broke, you got
to
fix it.
Take the ball to the basket. That's what, you know, guys like Gary Harris, Keith Appling was a master at it during the beginning part of last year. If things weren't working perimeter-wise for this team, hey, Keith Appling would say, okay, I'm going to take this ball to the basket, I'm going to get fouled, I'm going to go to the foul line. And you know
how
many
– or dish
it. And this is the thing that, you know, you talk about 5 for 20 from the three-point line. Michigan State, you know how many free throws they shot last night, Alex? You talk about Brandon Dawson. I just talked about Brandon Dawson in our quick hit headliners about being, you know, terrible from the free throw line. But Michigan State has to get to the free throw line more. They shot only 10 free throws last night. Just 10? That's not going to get it done against a Duke team, period. I think Duke shot somewhere near like 23 free throws last night. They were aggressive. Quinn Cook, you know, Tyus Jones, they were going inside in the paint as well, getting fouled left and right. Michigan State's aggressiveness was simply not there, and they relied on that jump shot to bail them out. Simple as that. That mentality has to change for this team. Also, turnovers. See, it seems like every year we're harping on turnovers, Alex. You know, there were a few moments throughout that game. I already mentioned Denzel Valentine late in that stretch where Michigan State had a chance to make a big run. He had to push off. He was called for a foul. And then you look at it. Denzel Valentine got his fourth foul at the 8-minute mark. Plenty of time. We talked about Denzel Valentine needing to be a factor each and every game for this team. He is in a leadership role. I think Denzel Valentine is going to transition to be a great player as the season goes on. but he has to be smarter out there on the court. I think right now what Denzel Valentine is going through, again, it's only two games into the year, but it's all mental with Valentine. When he is in the game and into mentally, Denzel Valentine is one of the best players in the Big Ten. But when he makes those little mistakes, it seems to throw him off early, and he just doesn't become himself as the game goes on. But again, you cannot, for Denzel Valentine, he cannot get into early foul trouble like that against teams like Duke, or any team for that matter, and expect other guys to step up in his absence. That can't happen. 8 minutes to go, four fouls, that's dangerous. Totally dangerous. Now, you know, if you look at it, Duke took advantage heavenly off of Michigan State's turnovers. Duke at one point in that game, again, harping on that eight minute mark, because that, again, for me, that was really a turning point in that game for Duke to just kind of run away with this thing and to salvage a lot of momentum. Duke scored 24 points off of turnovers at that 8 minute mark in the second half. 24 points compared to Michigan State, who only had 6 points off of Duke's turnovers. That is alarming to me. And I thought Michigan State could have run the break more. Talking about transition buckets, I still would like to see Michigan State get out on the break more, because I think that's when really a guy who I thought had a solid game last night, talking about Brandon Dawson, 18 points, 9 rebounds, that really gets Brandon Dawson in tune when he gets those easy transition buckets. So there are certainly a lot of areas that this Michigan State team can improve on, and I think they will improve on, but Duke sort of expose those things that Navy tried to in that first half. So Michigan State will get better here. By no means. You exactly. Always bring up my panic meter here, Alex. By no means am I panicking. I'm just pointing out the things that are alarming and need to get better as the season rolls on before conference play.
And an additional point to add, give credit to Duke, man. For 9 All-American, McDonald All-Americans, you have plenty of freshmen playing. They look like they've been gelling for a long time, the way they started off the game, the first 10 points.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
The breaks, the passing. They just gelled compared to Michigan State. It looks like Michigan State, they're just still trying to find the groove. And although Izzo has said that these guys are different, they hang out a lot more, they're in the gym all night long. Although these players are doing a lot more compared to past years, they're still trying to find that chemistry, I feel, Al. And just an early growing pain. But they kind of like that, the under-the-radar kind of thing that we've talked about often now. The under-the-radar, it's one loss. Obviously, there are going to be some more games to make up for it. Not a bad start. I think within 10 points is fine.
Yeah, it really – I tell you what, looking at the margin of victory that Duke had over in Michigan State, that was certainly surprising for me. They definitely gave themselves a chance to win. And I tell you what, man, this Tyus Jones kid – he's NBA ready right now. I mean, this kid, oh my god.
Him and Okafor, man.
Oh, they both are just so cracked. What really impressed me about Jahil Okafor is just how controlled he is with the basketball. He takes his time. He doesn't really force anything. He doesn't act sporadically when he gets the ball. He takes his time, really weighs out his defender, and makes a move that is very polished. He's very polished to be so young in college basketball. He's unbelievable. And then Tyus Jones, I mean, a quick first step. He's great at getting to the hole. He's a fearless guy. Hey, Tyus Jones, I mean, his upside is through the roof right now. And it's so crazy because these are both, Okafor and Jones, are two players that Michigan State went after. That Tom Izzo won it. And, you know, Michigan State gets burned by him last night. But, hey, I think, this is still Tom Izzo we're talking about. This team will get better as the season rolls on. And especially, when they get, you know, Javon Best back, I think this team will certainly turn some heads. So, with that being said, let's not panic here, folks. Let's not panic. It's Duke. It is Duke. So Coach K now improves to 8-1. 8-1 overall against Michigan State. Michigan State still trying to figure out how to, the puzzle that is the blue. How about that? All right, folks. Well, before we hit the break, I want to bring up this because, this was a story that really kind of turned my head and really opened my eyes, I will say. Really opened my eyes because I didn't know how serious this epidemic was until Sports Illustrated published this article on which was entitled, quote, "Young, Gifted, and Homeless." It is a profile done on homeless athletes. It was a very, very polished article done by SI where they sort of look at the lives and follow the lives of, I believe, about 5 or 6 athletes from around America, high school athletes from around America, and sort of profile their lives And all of them are homeless. Each and every one of them are homeless, but unbelievably gifted on the football field, on the basketball court. It's a really remarkable profile done. Now, some alarming statistics here that SI also included in this article. Again, if you haven't seen it, all you got to do is just Google homeless athletes, Sports Illustrated. It pops right up. I always get Sports Illustrated. I subscribe to Sports Illustrated and read this article, which really turned my head. But really interesting because during the this is a statistic coming right out of Sports Illustrated. During the 2012-2013 school year, there were nearly 1.3 million homeless children and teens enrolled in elementary, middle, and high schools. Again, that's during 2012 and 13. That's according to the U.S. Department of Education, which is a startling increase of 58% over the last 6 years. Unbelievable stuff, folks. And it goes on, again, to profile these different athletes. Just briefly, before we hit this break, I just want to just plant this seed into your brain here and to tell this story. He's a 6'5" basketball prospect. His name is Isaiah Lamb. And, Isaiah, again, this kid is an unbelievably talented kid. He plays basketball, and, you know, he's got all these scholarship offers from different people, but a lot of people didn't know what Isaiah was going through. Isaiah Lamb and his parents found themselves crammed into a Hyundai Elantra and using a local laundromat not only to wash clothes in their bodies, but also Lamb was using it as a study hall. And it goes on to tell this story. His mom, Valerie, you know, she had to take off time from her job as an EMT after catching walking pneumonia. And his father, Donald, suffered a heart attack and cannot go back to work as a maintenance man. So after that happened, they got themselves in a hole, could not pay the rent, and they found themselves homeless and on the streets. Basketball became Isaiah's escape. It became his escape. The kid ended up becoming one of the top basketball prospects in the entire nation. And basketball really became an outlet for Isaiah to help his family out and to get them out of the situation that they are in. An unbelievable profile. There's also a profile about a young lady who's in high school who has a kid and didn't have the best relationship with her parents. And things happened where she was also homeless on the streets, didn't have anywhere to go. Her high school coach takes her in, acted like her mom and one of her family members. A really unbelievable story. But, you know, I wanted to plant this seed because later on this week, we're going to be diving into the discussion about homeless children in America and homeless athletes and just how this happens and why is it so prevalent here in America. Very interesting discussion that we'll be having right here on Current Sports. You do not want to miss that. Again, check out the profile, and I would love to get your thoughts on it. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there or tweet us at AlMartinWKR or at WKR_sports. Let's hit our break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Brian Callaway of the Lansing State Journal. He's going to give us a preview of the Michigan State and Notre Dame women's basketball game that will be taking place tonight at the Breslin Center. A pretty big game for the Spartans. You don't want to miss that chat coming right up. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Well, a pretty big game for the Michigan State women's basketball team as they take on one of the national powerhouses in the realm of women's college basketball, folks. Yes, Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, they have been good for quite some time now. And the Spartans will be going mano a mano with the Fighting Irish tonight at 7 at the Breslin Center for a whiteout for all of those attending the game. How about that, folks? So now we invite Brian Callaway, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal, to sort of dive into this game and to give us a glimpse into what to expect tonight. Brian, how you doing, my man?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing, Al?
Oh, I cannot complain. Glad to have you on, Brian. So, you know, first off, I want to talk about how the Spartans began this season. Of course, they had a game against Eastern Michigan on Sunday, starting off with a W, you know, etching that first win of the regular season over the Eagles. A very gritty game, 21 turnovers for Michigan State. They seemed pretty bothered by that full-court press that the Eagles enacted throughout much of that game. For that game, just to talk about that game right now, Brian, was EMU that good, or was this mostly on the woes and shoulders of Michigan State?
I think it was a combination of a couple of different things. Obviously, it's a season opener, so kind of the first time out there, and Michigan State has a lot of has a lot of players playing bigger roles than they have in the past. You look at someone like Anna Morrissey, who stepped up down the stretch and had a big three, hit two late free throws that helped them hold on for the win in that game. She's a girl that really, she walked onto the program and has only played in, I believe, 23 games prior to that during her three-year career here. So she started that game for them at the point guard position, which is a position that is a little bit of a concern for them right now because they don't have a true point guard. And then you have other players like Akira Miller, who also was a walk-on that's part of the program, and she hasn't really played as much in the past, and she was one of the main players they had coming off the bench in that game. So I think it was a little combination of some new pieces, and they're trying to get everyone acquainted with one another. And then also, I mean, that Eastern team was a little quick and scrappy team, and they're not a bad program. I mean, this is a program that played in the postseason last year. Their coach, Tori Verde, he was a coach in the WNBA before, so he's a pretty good coach, and it looks like he's got a nice system in place. And also, I mean, it's a Super Bowl game for a team like Eastern Michigan, you know, coming in to play, you know, the big-time team in the state, you know, and trying to make their mark as well, too.
Yeah, that is certainly true, Brian. And, you know, you look at, you know, you're talking about the offensive end, Ariel Powers and Torrey Jankowska. I mean, they've been really shouldering the load offensively for this team so far. But you can also throw in Becca Mills. She's also been a presence down low from time to time. I mean, looking at those three, I mean, you know, from the outside looking in for this team, I mean, can this, you know, Powers, Jankowska, and Mills trio, how far can they carry this team, you think?
I think with Powers and Jankowska, especially with them being guards and they kind of can dominate and carry games. I mean, I think that duo will dictate how this team does this season. Obviously, Ariel Powers is an all Big Ten player as a freshman a year ago, and Jankowska also a big-time player as a freshman a year ago for this team. And they were the two leading scorers for this team and pretty much were the key components to them getting to the winning a Big Ten regular season title a year ago. So I think with them, I mean, they're going to definitely dictate how this team goes. And they're going to be playing heavy minutes. I mean, I think Torrey played 39 minutes, I believe, against Eastern Michigan, and Ariel played 37. So, I mean, the team is going to need them to perform at a high level at all times and be consistent. And obviously, Torrey had a little bit off-night shooting, but still was able to get 20 points in that opener just by the fact of now knocking down her free throws. And then when you look at someone like Becca Mills, I mean, she's going to be going to have to carry the leadership role in this team as well, too. I mean, she's one of the two captains along with Jason Hines. She's a senior. She should hit the 1,000-point mark sometime this in the early stages of this season, too. So she's played a lot of meaningful basketball for this program. And like you said, I mean, she can be a presence in the post. And also, I mean, she can be a hit an outside shot, too. She's shown in the past the ability to hit a three, to hit a little bit of a jumper as well, too. But the thing they need her to do, especially in the game like tonight against Notre Dame, is rebound, because last year against Notre Dame, they were really crushing the boards.
Yeah, that is very, very true. And you mentioned earlier senior Anna Morrissey. Of course, she made her first career start that day against EMU. I mean, how effective can she be this year? Because you mentioned how Michigan State is still struggling to find that true point guard to be that facilitator on this squad. How comfortable did Anna look to you in that role on Sunday?
I did not think she looked too bad at all. I mean, she had a decent line for a point guard making her first start and, you know, was distributing the ball, getting teammates involved. And I think she didn't play beyond her ability. She did what she was capable of doing, and I think that kind of is what this team needs. They need someone to kind of split time with Torrey Jankowska to kind of run the show for this team. And I think it also helps, especially with Torrey playing heavy minutes, that she doesn't have to necessarily dictate the load and carry the ball up the court all the time. And I think, you know, Anna is more of a quieter person if anyone's ever talked to her, and she doesn't really have that commanding presence of a point guard, and that's something that she is kind of working at.
Brian Callaway, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. All right, Brian, well, let's get to the nitty-gritty and preview tonight's matchup against Notre Dame. I tell you what, I got to bring up this this young lady because she is just tearing it up right now. Breonna Turner, how in the world do you stop Breonna Jordan? She shattered Notre Dame's record for points by a freshman in the opening game, 29 points over UMass Lowell. What must happen to slow her down tonight, Brian?
Well, Susie Merchant kind of called her a mini Kevin Durant type player when she was talking about her after Sunday's game and again at her press conference on Monday. And she seems like a player that can do a little bit of everything. And she's long, lanky, and you know, can fill a lot of different roles for Notre Dame. So I think, you know, their defense in the post, if she's going to be down there at times, is going to be a very key point, keeping her off the boards and keeping the Irish out of transition as well, too, because this is a team that likes to run, and I mean, she's part of a group that can help them get up and down the court and score a lot of points like they're capable of doing. So I just think it's going to be a collaborative team effort in kind of slowing her down, because she will be do a little bit of everything for Notre Dame.
Yeah, for Michigan State, I mean, a big game like this earlier in the year. I mean, how big of a litmus test can this be for this Spartan squad to see exactly where they are at this point in the year and to see what areas must improve to move on?
I think it's a great litmus test, like you said. I mean, this is a team that did not lose until the national championship game against UConn a year ago. Has several key players back, like a Jewel Lloyd, who's a preseason AP All-American guard. I mean, this is a great test to kind of see what they need to work on against a team that has been one of those perennial powers, especially over these past 4 years. I mean, Notre Dame has been to the Final Four 4 straight years, and a number of these players on this team have been a part of a couple of those runs. So it's going to be a valuable test to see where Michigan State is at, what they need to do better at. And I think, you know, you can learn some things from a loss sometimes more than you can learn from, you know, playing opponents that you should easily beat.
Yeah, that is certainly true. Now, Notre Dame, folks, is number 3 in this week's Associated Press poll and is number 2 in this week's WBCA USA Today poll. Now, Notre Dame also is among the nation's winningest programs during the past 6 years, from 2009 to 2010 to present day, ranked 3rd with 168 victories. Certainly impressive. Now, Brian, how has this program ascended to one of the top-tier programs in the nation, and what continues this consistent success for Notre Dame? Is it winning the recruiting wars every year?
Oh, they're winning a lot of recruiting wars a lot of years, especially with a freshman like Breonna Turner, who's from Texas, has decided to go to the program. But I think it really even starts with Skylar Diggins. I talked to Muffet McGraw a couple of days ago, and she said, I mean, that was pretty much a big key in elevating them to the success that they're having now, is keeping her home. I mean, obviously, Skylar Diggins is a South Bend native, and she decided to stay home, and she really kind of set a tone in practices and just with everything that team did to kind of elevate them to a Final Four caliber team on a year-in and year-out basis. And, you know, she also had the celebrity status, too. I mean, obviously, we know that she's signed with Jay-Z now.
Yeah, man. The Rock, baby.
Yeah. And with it in the WNBA, and she's doing big things there as well, too. And, I mean, she's just one of the faces of women's basketball right now. So, I mean, keeping her home was a big thing for them, because Notre Dame, they've been a pretty consistent program under McGraw prior to her arriving, but they really took that next step under her. So, and I think that's kind of helped them get some of these other big-time recruits, maybe like a Breonna Turner, just because of the impact that she had on that program and just kind of the attention that she brought in that program as well, too.
Yeah, Skylar has certainly become a staple in women's sports in general, not even just women's basketball. She's something else, Brian. All right, well, talking about the Spartans now, I want to talk about the Big Ten really quickly. Brian, where do you think this team will finish in the Big Ten? Do they have a chance to win another Big Ten championship this year?
I think they'll definitely be right in the mix and in the conversation. I mean, when you have a player like Ariel Powers and one like Tori Jankowska, I mean, you should be right in the thick of the race. I mean, those are two players with a lot of potential and can score a lot of points for this team and can carry them. I think the Big Ten will be a lot tougher for them this year, obviously with the addition of Maryland, which is a team that also was in the Final Four last year, and also Rutgers. I mean, those are two perennial good women's basketball programs that the Big Ten added, and that's just going to make the league that much tougher. So Maryland is the favorite, but Michigan State has been picked right there to finish behind them. So I think Michigan State will be right there in the mix as well as you know, teams like Iowa, which was a team that did very well last year, Nebraska, another team that did very well. And it seems like, you know, Purdue and Penn State, I mean, those are teams that have been perennially good over these past few years. I mean, they'll probably be right there in the mix as well, too, as well as Rutgers. So I think the Big Ten is going to be very interesting to watch this year. It's going to be a lot tougher than in years past when you have a Maryland and a Rutgers on board. But, you know, Susie Merchant has done consistently well in Big Ten play since she's arrived in East Lansing. I mean, this is her eighth year, and Michigan State's finished third or better in all but one season during her tenure. So I would expect them to be right there in the mix again. And, I mean, this should be one of the front runners to win another Big Ten championship, and it would be 3 in 5 years if they were able to do it this season.
Yeah, it is certainly going to be a fun one, to say the least, Brian. All right, well, you know, I hate to put you on the spot here, Brian, but I'm going to. Give me a prediction for tonight, my man.
I think you got to go with Notre Dame in this one. I mean, Notre Dame has a big talent advantage, and they've got the depth. I mean, Notre Dame has 6 McDonald's All-Americans on their team, and I mean, they just have a lot of talent. One of them's coming off their bench, obviously, and I just believe Notre Dame is a little bit deeper right now than Michigan State is right now. Obviously, Michigan State's losing. It doesn't have a few key individuals that would help them in a matchup like this with Brandy Agee, who tore ACL in the offseason. I mean, I think that would definitely change the complexion of a game like this. But again, the last time that Notre Dame was here, which was in 2000, was a one-point game that was down to the wire. So I think this could be a close game, and Michigan State can take advantage of a wide-out crowd, like you mentioned, and a home court advantage too. So I think it'll be interesting, but I just think Notre Dame has the edge, you know, heading into this.
All right. Well, it's going to be a fun one tonight. Brian, I will certainly see you at the Breslin tonight at 7. Looking forward to it. Brian Callaway, MSU sports reporter for the Lansing State Journal. Brian, you take care. See you tonight, my man.
Sounds good. You too, man.
All right, Brian Callaway. Gotta love that. Always great insight with Brian Callaway. All right, folks, let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will go back in time, yes, and talk about an infamous moment in Detroit Pistons history, the Malice at the Palace. We'll be chatting with Lindsey Hunter, former point guard for the Detroit Pistons, about that moment and so much more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
And it's Bedlam in Detroit, Steven Jackson, being held back by Eddie Gill. Oh, now a fan from behind with one.
And somebody's beating up Freddie.
They have gone berserk in Detroit.
Get somebody here to help.
No security on hand. Ron Artest going into the crowd.
Oh, man, was that a crazy moment or what? I'll never forget. I'm sitting there with my stepdad and my mom, and we're watching this game. You know, of course, I'm a huge Pistons fan, guys, you know, since birth. I think I popped out the womb with a Chauncey Billups jersey on, all right? But, I mean, man, I'll never forget that moment. Ben Wallace pushes Ron Artest, and then the unexpected happened. Everyone nationally talked about this story for like a month and a half and some change after it took place. It was dubbed as the infamous Malice at the Palace. Today marks 10 years since that took place out in Auburn Hills, Michigan. And today we have a man who was on the court when it went down. He is certainly a friend of WKAR's Current Sports. Lindsey Hunter, former point guard for the Detroit Pistons in 2004, Detroit Pistons NBA champion. Lindsey, my man, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Al. How about you?
Oh, I cannot complain, man. I tell you what, you know, this is a moment in sports that is still talked about to this day. In my opinion, for me, this is just my own personal opinion. It was the worst brawl that I've ever seen in sports. Now, I want you to take us back to that moment. You being a player, you being on the court, how did things take off so quickly once that Ben Wallace push happened on Ron Artest for delivering that hard foul?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure how, you know, it escalated, you know, as fast as it did. But if you remember, after Ben pushed Ron, Ron went and laid on the table right there, you know, by where the media was. He kind of just laid there. And when the cup was thrown is when he snapped and ran after whoever threw a cup at him. Remember?
Yeah, exactly. A cup of beer flew. He was trying to chill out and take his, you know, chill out a little bit. And then all of a sudden that happened.
Because our whole team was, well, why did you get so mad? Ben just shoved you halfway across the court, but the cup is what took you over the top. Well, I just couldn't get past that part.
Right, right, exactly. That is very, very true. Good point there, Lindsay. Now, you know, what was going through your head? Because looking at the video, because I actually went back, you know, when I found out this morning that, man, it's been 10 years since this has happened, you know, back in 2004.
Right.
And I looked at
right.
the video, and you can see you were kind of, you know, playing, just kind of mediating, you know, the action and sort of kind of holding back Ben Wallace. I mean, what was going through your head in that situation? And what did you try to do during that moment?
Well, I just, you know, I just wanted to stay in between our guys and their guys and try to get everybody, you know, settled down because, you know, you realize that there's going to be a lot of fines. There's going to be a lot of people getting suspended. You know, the ramifications of it weren't worth the being angry in that moment, you know, and just try to get guys to settle down. You know, you had Rip Hamilton trying to go after people. It was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And you don't, you know, of course, you don't want anybody to get hurt. You don't want anybody to be hit or to hit anybody because, you know, throughout history we've seen some of, you know, these incidents happen and they can change a life within a split second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you saw the Kermit Washington punch on Rudy Tomjanovich that almost ended, you know, not only his career but his life. So, you know, you try to just not let it escalate to that point. You know, we're all grown men and, you know, we got kids watching us. You got families in the audience and you just try to stay away from that.
Yeah, that is certainly true. A moment that we won't ever forget. Now, Lindsay, we got another clip here. Bear with me here. Let's play this one.
And this right now, extremely dangerous.
Absolutely.
This may be the worst ever seen in an NBA game.
They need to call this off. You need to call this game off. Let it go. And get these guys out of here.
And those that are left now trying to throw objects on the floor. Hard to even find the officials. And this is an utter disaster.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, those are two announcers sort of recounting the events that took place during chaos, Lindsay. Now, you know, when fans got involved in a situation, that's why I think it took another level and why it is so memorable, because you had a situation where fans were involved here. Some of them even came out on the hardwood, on the court, trying to throw blows, go toe-to-toe with Ron Artest. Again, you talked about the beer that was thrown. I mean, when fans got involved, is that when it all hits you guys as players that, okay, this has approached something that is monumental?
Yeah, of course. When, you know, when players go in the stands and things have been thrown at players, you know, nobody wins in that situation. You know, fans are wrong and players are wrong. And I think our game, you know, it was a really crucial part in that because basketball is the only game where the fans truly get to interact with the players.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our game is allowed fans to, you know, be right up front and able to reach out and touch players. So, and that's a part of it. I think that element of it is what, you know, we have over the other sports, and we don't want to lose that connection. But when you get one side or the other side, you know, acting in an inappropriate way, it damages that trust. It damages that relationship. And, you know, it was crucial, but I think it helped in the long run because we kind of realized how valuable that was. And the NBA did everything they could do to mend that fence, and we've gotten over it. But, you know, it's so important for us as players, or those guys as players, and fans to realize that that is a very, very special atmosphere that we have, and we don't want to ruin that ever.
Right. That is certainly true. It's certainly not only – you know, taught a lot to the players who play the game, but also as fans and how they should act during during sporting events, without a doubt. Now, you know, and after that moment, Lindsay, I mean, what I'm curious, what was the locker room like? You know, when everything sort of died down to a degree, and you guys went back in the locker room. I mean, what was that moment like for you guys?
Well, we were held in the locker room for hours. Like, we couldn't leave.
Oh, wow.
So when everybody was, you know, when the arena was clear, the parking lot was clear, we were the last people to get to leave the arena. And it was frustrating, and it was, you know, it was really, really crazy at that time. And even, you know, after that happened, there, I think it was a game being played that we had a bomb threat, I think, in the building. Yeah, and it was, you know, it just didn't end there. It was things that happened after that, you know, with the ramifications of that event. And, you know, it was wild. Hopefully nothing like that ever happened again, but that was crazy.
It certainly was. Now, have you talked to Ben, Rashid, and other teammates about that moment? Do they regret anything?
Well, yeah, we talk about it, but we really don't talk about it in the way that everybody else does because, you know, at that time, that was a big rivalry between us and Indiana. They were an up-and-coming team. You know, we were the team stopping them from coming out of the East. So you could see, you know, how tempers could get to that point. But, you know, it didn't really bother us as much as it did everybody else. I think the only thing people regretted was, you know, Ben lost money. You know?
Right. All right. Anytime he hits the wallet, it's a problem, right?
Right. And Ben wasn't mad at anybody, the fans or anything. He just, you know, he didn't want Ron Artest taking cheap shots at him. And, you know, and he had warned the ref once. And, you know, so it happened again. And, you know, Ben, he's a quiet, reserved guy. Mm-hmm. And those are the worst people to get angry because once they go over the top, you know, it's hard to bring them back.
Yeah, it's like you just awakened the Hulk. Yeah, without a doubt, Lindsay.
Right.
Folks, we are talking with Lindsay Hunter, former Detroit Pistons guard and 2004 NBA champion. We are taking a look back 10 years later after the infamous Malice at the Palace, the brawl between the Pistons and the Indiana Pacers at the Palace of Auburn Hills. Of course, Lindsay was on the court when that took place. Final question, Lindsay, before I get you out of here. I want to talk about, you know, you talk about how that sort of kind of changed the dynamic. You know, basketball is really the only sport when you can have that personal one-on-one connection, your feet away from the players who are playing the game. After that took place, I mean, what sort of changes at NBA games, security-wise, how did that change that realm of things too?
Well, it put the NBA on guard as far as the fans and the players because, you know, there are certain rules I guess the fans have to follow, but as a fan in the NBA game, you can pretty much say what you want to say and do what you want to do. You know, I mean, and we've experienced it, you know, being called, you know, some names that aren't, you know, too popular with us from fans, you know, and that's fine. That's part of it. But I always felt like there needed to be some type of guidelines that, okay, you know, you can boo all you want to, but, you know, don't get personal with players and don't
right.
do this because we have a lot of rules that we can't step. There are lines that we can't step across.
Right.
You know,
right.
And as an NBA player, when you step across those lines, you know, you're being sued instantly. There is no other ifs, ands, and buts about it. But, you know, as a fan, you want them to enjoy the game. You want them to cheer for their team and their guys, but you don't want it to be inappropriate. And I think that was the biggest thing.
And, you know, Lindsay, I will say, now, I haven't never gotten personal with any players, but I tell you what, back in the day in high school, man, me and my stepdad used to go to the games, and I specifically remember, I mean, we had seats, like, right behind the Denver Nuggets bench when the Pistons were playing the Nuggets one game, and we are giving it to Carmelo Anthony. I mean, going in, you know what I mean? And in fun, nothing personal, just having fun. For you as a player, again, you've experienced that sort of, you know, talking trash from fans and whatnot. How do you block that out?
Well, playing basketball, you've been through that your entire life.
Right.
That's part of the game, especially amongst players. You know, when you get hecklers, you know, and if it's done in good nature and good fun, you don't mind it.
Right.
You know, but, you know, you kind of want, you know, you don't want people talking about your personal life. You don't want people talking about your family and things of that nature. You know, you're talking about me on the court, fine. You know, do what you do. Go ahead. But the other stuff, I think, is what I think crosses the line.
Yeah. Have you ever barked back at a fan for crossing that line?
Yeah, I have.
Right. It happens. I mean, come on now. I mean, you and when
oh,
you when
course.
You
we're look, we're all human. Nobody is above anything. So
right.
Yeah, I've barked back before. And, you know, but that's part of it, you know.
That happens. All right. We're talking to Lindsey Hunter, former Detroit Pistons guard, 2004 NBA champion. Lindsey, before I get you out of here, man, it's a pretty big game happening here in East Lansing, a women's basketball game. The Spartans are playing Notre Dame, one of the storied programs in all of women's college basketball. It was funny because when we had you on for the TV show, you and I were talking before we taped, and you told me how you were working actually with Ariel Powers, who is an outstanding guard for this team. She's leading the Spartans right now in scoring. She had a great game on Sunday. She's been ripping it up. You actually got a chance to work out with her, and I got a chance to actually talk to her about that during the post-game presser after the EMU game, and she talked about how she would shoot jump shots with you and so on and so forth. What makes Ariel Powers so special, Lindsey?
Oh, man, she is, she has an uncanny athleticism, you know, that I don't care, girl, boy, you know, male, female, she has a unique athleticism and just working out with her, I was just blown away. Like, wow, every single challenge I put her through, I mean, she could master it. And for, you know, anybody to be able to do, especially your first time doing something, you know, it's really unique. You know, that's a, like a Derrick Rose type of athleticism that she possesses.
Right.
And just a will and a strong mindset where she, her approach to working is so serious that, you know, when you find a individual like that, especially a young person, you got something special. And you know, Aria is a very, very special young lady on that court, and you know, she has a bright future.
Yeah, she certainly does. I tell you what, that is pretty cool stuff. All right, Lindsey, well, I'll let you get out of here. Again, former Pistons guard and 2004 NBA champion, my man Lindsey Hunter. Lindsey, always a pleasure.
All right, thanks, Al. I'm going to try to make it up to that game if this snow permits it.
Gotcha.
But I want to try to come up and support her.
All right. Hey, well, shoot me a text if you do.
All right, I will, Al. Thanks.
All right, Lindsey Hunter, gotta love that. Hey, that's pretty cool stuff. Yeah, actually, you know, in the offseason, Ariel Powers and Lindsey linked up in the offseason, and they were working out pretty tough, folks. And, again, as you just heard, he knew from a very, very young moment that this Ariel Powers could be something special for MSU. So there you have that. Folks, if you still have any memories, again, 10 years ago to the day at the Malice in the Palace happened, leave a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Even tweet us at AlMartinWKR or at WKAR_sports. We will read those tweets and or comments live on the air tomorrow, folks. Well, we are out of time. Fantastic show tomorrow, folks. Again, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you. We'll recap. I'll be filing a report from that Michigan State and Notre Dame game after it goes down tonight. We'll also talk a little MSU football, all of that and so much more. A jam-packed show, and on Friday we have some surprises too, some more ticket giveaways for you folks. So you don't want to miss any of that. I want to give a thanks to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports. Shout out to Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal and Lindsey Hunter. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care, stay warm, have a fantastic day, and be easy, people.